Good evening and welcome to the InfoWars Nightly News. I'm your host, Rob Dew. And today's date is Wednesday, September 5th, 2012. And here's a little look at what we have coming up.
Tonight, the establishment media is attempting to discredit what it characterizes as conspiracy theories surrounding massive government ammunition purchases. Then, a new study looks at specially adapted aircraft to disperse particles into the upper atmosphere. Plus, television stations could start using drones to cover news stories. And Linda West talks to disaster preparedness expert Dave Acton. All that and more coming up on the InfoWars Nightly News.
So we have a great show lined up for you tonight. A lot of hard-hitting information. We're going to start off with a story out of CNET News. Homeland Security's domain seizures worry Congress. I say it's about time, Congress, that you're getting into the act. In a letter to the U.S. Attorney General, Congress members cite concerns about seizing the domain names of websites whose actions and content are presumed to be lawful and protected speech. And here's the quote. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security is seizing domains and taking down URLs in the name of copyright infringement. But its tactics are worrying certain members of Congress. And these are the members. We are concerned about your department's seizure of domain names under Operation In Our Sights, launched in November 2010, the letter said. Our concern centers on your department's methods and the processes given when seizing the domain names of websites whose action and content are presumed to be lawful protected speech. And the three members of Congress who are concerned about this, Representative Zoe Lofgren, Representative Jared Polis, and Representative Jason Chaffetz. So they're obviously concerned about this, and this has been going on since 2010 under the name Operation In Our Sights. And here it is. According to the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, roughly 700 domain names have been seized since Operation In Our Sights was launched in 2010. And we've been covering this story, I think, a little bit before that. We were concerned about the way they were bringing out this speech of we have to protect things that are so-called copyrighted. We've seen different government officials going after people selling fake T-shirts. Is this something the government should be doing? Should this be something for local law enforcement or even the companies themselves to go after and police? Why are we having to pay for the government to go around and police other people's thoughts and actions? Very interesting indeed. It's about time Congress is starting to wake up to that fact and starting to speak out against it. Now we get two articles here from, we're going to call them straw man articles. And basically they came out, we'll go to that first screen here. One's from ABC and one's from CNN. They came out on the same day. First from ABC, why does Social Security need 174,000 bullets? And the second one, Social Security combats bullet rumors. That's out of CNN. And basically what they do is they launch what Alex Jones has talked about yesterday, was a straw man attack. So we were questioning the fact is why DHS buying over 1.4 billion bullets? Mostly hollow points, different calibers. Why are they making those purchases in addition to all the other preparations they're making? And so what these two mainstream media sources do is they look at the one article of the Social Security Administration purchasing 174,000 bullets, which is equal to about 600 bullets per gun-carrying enforcement official for the Social Security Administration. And so that's troubling in itself that they're getting those. But they just go after the 174,000 rounds and make it seem like we're crazy for even asking that question when they don't even look at the 1.4 billion. So what do we have to do? Well, Kurt Nimmo and Paul Joseph Watson combated those lies and those straw man attacks with our own articles. First one from Nimmo, establishment launches straw man over government bullet purchases. And then from Paul Joseph Watson, Associated Press whitewashes controversy over feds buying ammunition. And we've written a ton of articles, one of which was, if this is such not a big deal, why are they blacking out certain parts of their purchase orders so we can't know what the bullets are for? That was one about Fed censors bullet buys. Why are they buying 1.4 billion bullets when they made, before that, they never made purchases anywhere close? So those are the kind of questions we're asking. And the mainstream media, instead of asking those questions along with us, wants to cherry pick and attack just certain parts of our argument going, oh, well, they want 174,000. What's the big deal? Well, it is a big deal. It's a big deal that our government is arming with hollow point bullets, which are against the Geneva Convention, for presumably to quell any civil unrest that'll be brought about by these bankers. So there it is right there. DHS classifies new ammo purchases following controversy. Why didn't they ask about that? Look, they're blacking out ammo purchases. What's wrong? I mean, what do they have to hide? If they don't have anything to hide, why not tell us what's going on with these ammo purchases? It stinks to high heaven, and we've got the mainstream media complicit in this, going after one small part of this argument. And that's why I decided to bring up this story again today. One, because we wrote two new articles on it, and two, just to illustrate the fact that they really have no ground to stand on. There's no reason why the DHS needs 1.4 billion plus bullets. And mainstream media has no argument for that, so they just take one little part and go after it. Now we're going to move on to chemtrails, which they've told us for years don't exist. We're crazy conspiracy theorists to be pointing up at those lines in the sky, wondering why they're there and asking those questions and taking the samples and getting those tested. We're crazy. In fact, there's never any, nothing like that goes on here except now. Well, now they put a price tag on it. Cost of chemtrail program put at $5 billion a year. And this is a Paul Joseph Watson article, came out today from InfoWars. The cost of a massive program to spray sun-dimming particles into the upper atmosphere in the name of halting global warming, a process some contend is already underway via chemtrails, has been put at just below $5 billion a year. U.S. scientists writing in the Journal of Environmental Research Letters concluded that planes or airstrips could carry sun-dimming materials high into the atmosphere for an affordable price tag of below $5 billion a year as a way to slow climate change, reports Reuters, a process characterized as both feasible and affordable. One of the co-authors of this study is a man named Jay Apt, and he's out of Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. And if you go and look up the history of Carnegie Mellon University, this is one of the first universities to put on record in their writings and journals that fluoride was good for your teeth and that we needed to put it in there. And incidentally, Carnegie Mellon was owned by Andrew Carnegie, also owned a lot in Alcoa. And as part of their aluminum making, what they did was one of their byproducts was this hydrofluorosilicic acid, which they like to put in our water and call it fluoride and say it's good for our teeth, even though if you breathe it or touch it or drink it, it's toxic for you. But let's move on. So here's more from Carnegie Institute. This follows the latest study follows a similar Carnegie Institute for Science proposal, which also advocates spreading the upper atmosphere with aerosols, a process that would reduce by 20% the amount of sunlight that it takes a direct route to the ground and make blue skies fade to hazy and white. And that's from the New Scientist that they reported. So we have a process that they say doesn't exist, never existed, no one's ever doing anything like that, even though there's the lines all over the sky. But now they're proposing this, and then it's going to come out later that, oh, we've been doing it all along, but we've just been testing it. We've just been testing it. It wasn't a program that we were fully implementing. We were just testing it over, oh, you know, North America and Europe and South America and Australia. You know, we're working on a chemtrail film a while back, and we were getting chemtrail videos and photos from all over the world where they were just testing this program that doesn't exist and never has existed, only in theory. Oh, in fact, there's some there. That's from Spain. There's a place where it doesn't exist. Those trails are so beautiful. You know, that's just what happens when planes fly in the air. They leave condensation trails in perfect lines that last for hours, even though when I was a kid, I looked at the sky all the time and never saw those. I started actually filming chemtrails, I believe, in 2002, 2003. I was listening to the Alex Jones Show, and I think a caller called in asking about chemtrails. And this is about the time when he was having Clifford Carnicom on the show. And I remember I would be out shooting video for the company I work for, and I'm looking up, and I'm seeing chemtrails everywhere. So I just started filming those. I got to document this. And this was in Austin, Texas, early 2000s, 2002, 2003. 2004. So, you know, obviously the program, you know, it was still in its beta phase, I guess. So moving on, Reading University's Professor Keith, I love this last name, Shine, told the Daily Mail that clouds formed by aircraft fumes could linger for hours, depriving those areas under busy flight paths, such as London and home counties, of summer sunshine. So that's what it's meant to do. It's meant to darken the skies. It's meant to, you know, they're trying to reverse this problem that isn't even man-made anyway. And you know what? Our atmosphere is in a constant state of change. We've had plenty of climatologists on. We had a professor from Canada who is actually being ostracized for his views, and he's been studying the climate for 30 years, and he says it gets warmer, it gets colder, it gets warmer, it gets colder. So back in 2007 this happened. I think the article has a typo here. KSLA actually did a news piece. They found that the substance that fell to Earth from a high altitude chemtrail contained high levels of barium, 6.8 parts per million, and lead, 8.2 parts per million, as well as trace amounts of other chemicals, including arsenic, chromium, cadmium, selenium, and silver. All these, but one, are metals. Some are toxic, while several are rarely found in nature. So how did they get there? Well, and that was back in 2008, 2007. Well, KSLA also asked Mark Ryan, director of poison control, about the effects of barium on the human body. Ryan commented that short-term exposure can lead to anything from stomach to chest pains, and long-term exposure could cause blood pressure problems. And the Poison Control Center further reported that long-term exposure, as with any harmful substance, would contribute to the weakening of the immune system. Wow, so you got the chemtrails, you got high fructose corn syrup, you got GMOs, you have vaccines, all types of things that are hitting your immune system to make you weak for what? Maybe the coming pandemic, maybe the coming, I don't know, West Nile virus that they're freaking out about. Well, one thing's for sure. We know they've been spraying these things. We know it's been going on for a long time. I mean, those aren't natural clouds. What you're seeing there, those are chemtrails. In fact, we have two movies. One, What in the World Are They Spraying? And its follow-up, Why in the World Are They Spraying? Which kind of goes over the eugenics angle and patent issues that have to go with Monsanto and others making aluminum-resistant seeds, because that's another chemical they find a lot in these chemtrails is aluminum, and that by saturating with aluminum, certain crops won't grow until you use the Monsanto seed. So there you are. You got them in a two-pack there at the InfoWars store. You can go to InfoWarsShop.com or InfoWarsStore.com. $34.90 for both of them. And I would suggest you get them and have some viewing parties for your friends. And then you know what? You'll start walking around going, oh, my God, I haven't even noticed this. You know, because a lot of people don't notice them. I talk to people all the time that see them, and they don't know what they are. I'll say, hey, do you see that right there? Does that look like a normal cloud? You're like, no, it actually doesn't. I'm like, yeah. You know why? Because an airplane just made it, and there it is again making another one. Why do you think they stay over the atmosphere like that? Well, that's what they're doing. It's part of the New World Order eugenics agenda, and now they're going to make us pay for it to the tune of about $5 billion a year. So there's all kinds of health effects associated with chemtrails. You can go read it in the article about just the exposure to sulfur, what happens to your body, not to mention the barium, you've got aluminum, you've got chromium, all kinds of things. And go check out this article. It's called Cost of Chemtrail Program, put at $5 billion a year. It's by Paul Joseph Watson. A lot of good information in that. And then while you're at it, pick these up. Educate yourself so you know, you don't look like a crazy person when you are talking about it, jumping up, pointing at the sky like I do. A lot. Now moving on to another fear-mongering exercise. Manhattan, next urban area to be mass sprayed with pesticides in West Nile propaganda circus. This is from Ethan Huff, Adam Natural News. Thousands of residents living in dozens of neighborhoods at the center of the Big Apple are the latest victims to be forcibly sprayed with toxic pesticides as part of the ongoing nationwide propaganda circus involving the West Nile virus. Reports indicate that thousands of Manhattanites and others living in Brooklyn and elsewhere have already begun to be dosed with Anvil, a toxic insecticide chemical linked to endocrine disruption, liver damage, infertility, cognitive damage, and cancer, among other conditions. And as of this writing, the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene reports that there have been a mere 10 documented cases of West Nile encephalitis or meningitis in New York in 2012, which is apparently enough to warrant a mass spraying of chemicals throughout Manhattan's prestigious Upper West Side, Brooklyn South Side, Central Park, and elsewhere. The sprayings began on Friday, August 31st, and continued in the days that followed. Now, if you go on to read the rest of this article, which you should, this is linked on our, it's on our site, but it links back to the Natural News article. You could even read about, there's a link to a John Rappaport article where he thinks the disease may not even exist. Freelance investigative reporter John Rappaport recently wrote a piece on how there is no concrete scientific evidence proving that West Nile virus is even a real disease. as it has never been isolated or examined. So you can go read his report, too, that's on Natural News. And let me tell you, they're freaking out here in Austin, Texas. I had people, because they know I work for the show and that I'm up on the news, and like, what are the symptoms of West Nile virus? I said, I don't know. It's kind of like a flu-like symptom. You know, and if you get it, most people won't even know that they have it, and then they have a lifelong immunity to it. So it's not this deadly thing, even if it exists. So who knows if it really does exist, but the people here are freaking out. They're spraying up in Dallas for it. And it's just, you know, mosquitoes are a byproduct. I've been living with mosquitoes all my life coming from Louisiana. And I do remember we would hear the truck coming and be making this sound. And it was a kind of a pickup truck, and it had a big, you know, dispenser on the back, and it would just shoot the whole area full of this who knows what back then. And, you know, my mom would say, close the windows. Everybody close the windows. And we'd run around closing all the windows. I don't even know if that helped. I mean, it's probably why I speak out against the New World Order now, because I was sprayed so much as a kid. I doubt it. Mainly it's because I have common sense and I look at things in a objective light. But I wouldn't freak out too much about the West Nile virus. If you're a healthy person, take your vitamins. You should be fine. So moving on, CNBC.com, EU says Greeks should work six-day week. That's their new report. You know, so as the bankers loot the country, steal all the cash, now Greeks have to work a six-day work week. The Greeks should operate a six-day working week for all sectors, international creditors said in a letter to the Greek government, a measure which forms part of a wider set of demands in return for aid to the country. So you want our free money, our money that we print out of thin air? Well, start working that one extra day. And a leaked letter reported in the Guardian newspaper, the European Commission, European Central Bank, and International Monetary Fund, all organizations of love and truthfulness, called for Athens to implement the measure as part of a bailout agreement with lenders. Well, I say this, Greeks, why don't you start investigating the bankers that caused the problem and start arresting them like they're doing in Iceland? Iceland's already had a recovery, and they didn't have to bow down to central bank pressure. And you guys, you're not a giant country. You could probably turn this around. There's still time. But you got to educate the people. The people have to get mad at the government. And basically, you know, not just this protest of we need free stuff, a protest of let's go after the bankers. That's what needs to happen. Moving on to CBS News, television stations can start using drones to cover news stories. There you go. And there's iNews One, your Illuminati-funded news organization. A drone originally developed for military use could soon be used by television stations and journalists as a news-gathering device. That's right. We're looking over the L.A. freeway right now, and we've got our license plate readers active, and we see at least 15 people that need to pay unpaid parking tickets and a couple that don't have current registrations. We're going to send that information right over to the police so they can go after these miscreants. Back to you, Ted. Yeah, that's what's going to happen when you have drones reporting the news. Here we go in the article. We will likely have new cases involving civil lawsuits by those who assert the media has been unlawfully intruding upon their privacy rights by recording, publishing, or broadcasting images captured by drones. And this is a guy, last name is, it's Mickey Oestreicher, and he told the Harvard Law and Policy Review. This will also have the usual right to be left alone causes of action with the concomitant false light and public figure implications, as well as intrusion of solitude, our public disclosure of private facts and appropriation. And then EPIC, the Electronic Privacy Information Center representative, she's legal counsel, Amy Stepanovich, said these are designed to have very invasive equipment and watch people's movements. Well, they're also designed to have machine guns and tasers and hellfire missiles. And hey, you know, since we have the military using drones to spy on us and do all kinds of things, why not have the news also using drones to report on it? That way, there's no public accountability whatsoever to any of these organizations. Moving on to a piece out of the Collingswood Patch. Oakland police, and this is Oakland in New Jersey, seek Infowars.com graffitiists. And what may be an act of political vandalism, graffiti artists advertising the counterculture website found near the Oakland Railroad tracks. And there's a couple pictures there. You can see the artwork that was done there on a junction box. And then again, I think there it is on a bridge culvert. Infowars.com. On August 29th and 30th, Oakland police found four separate instances of graffiti throughout the borough in which Infowars.com had been spray painted in red and black paint. They collected forensic evidence at the scene of each incident that was submitted to the New Jersey State Police Crime Lab for processing. Each of these is being considered a separate account of criminal mischief. Wow. So the police are so concerned that people are spray painting Infowars.com in places that they've dispatched a team of investigators to collect forensic evidence submitted to a crime lab. I mean, this seems like overkill. Hey, why not just use a little scrubber and paint over it or take it off? You don't see them going after or treating regular graffiti artists like this, do you? No. You know, since you're in New Jersey, why don't you investigate your former governor, Jim Corzine, who stole about $2 billion worth of segregated account money from his investors and used it on, you know, betting the farm, you know, any which way. And he sent that money to J.P. Morgan. Why aren't we investing that? Why are we so concerned about people putting up Infowars.com, a website, enough that we're going to have a formal investigation into the matter? It gets worse. According to a press release from Oakland Police Chief Joseph T. Abati, police believe that someone may recognize the writing or may have information about someone who has shown interest in the website and are asking anyone with information about the incident to put on their brown shirts, see something, say something, and report to their nearest commissar. In fact, they give out their phone numbers, so let's give them out here on air so we could, you know, maybe report some crimes to the New Jersey Police Chief, Oakland Police Chief. 856-854-0049, extension 6028 or 6023. That's 856-854-0049, extensions 6028, 6030, and that's to the Oakland PD Detective Bureau. Why don't we ask them about child kidnapping rings that are run by the government? Why don't we ask them to investigate the UN, which is just over, you know, the river in New York City, and their constant warmongering efforts and stealing the resources from people? Why don't we ask them about Jim Corzine? Why are we so concerned about people spray painting a website in four different places in New Jersey? Well, they're afraid of the information getting out. This brings us to our quote of the day. Very apropos to the earlier story on drones. If you're concerned about it, maybe there's a reason we should be flying over you, right? And that's Douglas McDonald, Director of Special Operations at the Unmanned Applications Institute International, defending the domestic use of unmanned drones, which recently led to a 16-hour standoff between a farmer, his family, and police in North Dakota. Yeah, you have nothing to fear, right? So let us just come on in. Let us put our hands down your pants. Let us feel up your daughters and sons. Let us see what's in that coffee cup, because Al-Qaeda may be hiding in it. And what do you have to hide? And if you try to get the word out about any of this stuff going on, well, we're going to launch a full investigation. Well, we're going to be right back with Linda West. She's going to interview a FEMA and Prepper expert, Dave Acton. That'll be right after this break. But first, if you're watching this on YouTube, I would like to implore you, encourage you to go to prisonplanet.tv and join our army. Become one of us, the truth seekers out there. You can sign up. You get actually six. You can use your passcode for up to six different computers at once. There's the subscription, $5.95 a month, plus you get the 15-day free trial, or you can get a bigger discount for $54.95 for each year. And that really funds everything you're looking at here, the entire process. We sent six reporters out today to go do news stories and interview people on the streets. It's not cheap to do that. So please become a member. It's your way to fund us. We are not funded by George Soros or any other mainstream media or any other type of warmongering outfit like GE. So also, you may want to consider becoming a member of Planet InfoWars. That way you don't have to spray graffiti on there, but we do have a section of street art, which we would never want you to put up any of those pictures of sprayed graffiti of Infowars.com on at all. In all seriousness, we do not want you to put stickers or spray paint anything in unlawful areas. You should post those things in lawful areas. And if you don't, you're a terrorist. You need to be investigated by the Oakland Police Department and get the state police involved too, because it might be disagreeable to some of our future plans for you. All right, it's InfoWars Nightly News. I'm Rob Dew. We'll be right back.
I really enjoy it when the globalists try to poison us, and, well, we resist them via a free market system. Hello, my fellow info warriors. Alex Jones here, introducing you to the ProPure family of gravity-fed filters. Now, you know that the globalists are filling our water with radioactive isotopes, fluoride, lead, mercury, arsenic. And one of the few systems that can efficiently and economically remove or reduce down to non-detectable levels these poisons are gravity-fed filters. And ProPure is the top of the line. Their filters are impregnated with silver, a natural antibiotic. On top of that, they're bigger, so they filter faster. You don't have to prime these the first time you use them. It's amazing. Go to InfoWars.com and click on the shopping cart link to see the entire family of these babies. Now, the fluoride they add to our water is so tiny that most filters can't cut it out. But ProPure has their system that will, again, reduce it to non-detectable levels, almost get all of it out of there. That's also available. And if you look at the different systems they offer, the ProPure big brush finish is on a stand, so it's easier on a table or at your restaurant or wherever you have it to go up with a glass or a mug and fill it up. Then there's this big baby right here, the ProPure King large version. Got a lot of different options that come with it. Also, they have the ProPure big, probably one of the best values out there. And of course, it's burnished stainless steel. And then what I use on my RV, something that's great for your hunting cabin or the back porch, is the ProPure Traveler. Small and portable, but packs a huge punch, cleans out all that garbage. They also have a glass sight spigot, so you don't have to take the top off and look in the bottom area to see how much water. You can see how fast it's filtering with this optional system. The globalists obviously are hitting us through our water. It's time to take control of our lives. It's time to not give our children and families these poisons. And these systems cut it down to non-detectable levels across the board. ProPure is the name. I only promote what I believe in. And I use ProPure in my home and my office. And I recommend that you check out the information on ProPure at InfoWars.com. We already have the lowest price at InfoWars.com on the ProPure gravity filter system. But when you add in the 10% off when InfoWarriors use the product code WATER at InfoWars.com, nobody can top it. So again, it's a win-win-win. Stop drinking the poison water. Checkmate the globalists when it comes to your health, and support InfoWars.com and the work we're doing here. You know, many revolutionaries rob banks and things and kidnap people for funds. We promote in the free market the products we use that are about preparedness. That's how we fund this revolution against the New World Order in our move to restore our constitutional republic and a spirit of 1776 worldwide. Check it out at InfoWars.com. ProPure, top of the line, number one, most powerful and effective and economical gravity-fed water system in the world. ProPure, available, discounted at InfoWars.com. Don't forget product code WATER to save 10%. It's the latest generation, years in development. ProPure is the name. Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of longevity products. Aaron Dykes lost 92 pounds. We're going to show you some before and afters. Aaron, break down what happened, your story.
I've worked really hard with diet and exercise to try to lose weight, but I just didn't get the results. It just didn't happen. Then I saw what you were doing with InfoWarsTeam.com. I wasn't even trying to lose weight, but I got it because I wanted to feel better energy. I wanted that nutrition. Didn't even understand how that could kickstart my own weight loss goals. But the products did that for me. I found myself suddenly losing weight, more energetic, wanting to exercise, wanting to eat the right foods.
And they don't even advertise it as weight loss. I want to challenge our radio listeners to go to InfoWarsTeam.com. Sign up as a distributor and get wholesale pricing discounts at InfoWarsTeam.com.
Welcome back to InfoWars Nightly News. Tonight we have Dave Acton joining us. He has inside knowledge he's going to be sharing with us on disaster preparedness. Dave has worked with many government agencies, firefighters, and EMTs, and he's here tonight to help you prepare in case there's a crisis in your hometown. Welcome, Dave.
Hi, Linda. Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you. Well, Dave, you have quite a large YouTube following for your disaster preparedness videos. And so I'd like to ask you, what do you think is the number one thing an average person should have to be prepared?
Starts in the head psychologically. You have to decide right now that you're going to be a survivor. That's step number one. Once you decide you want to be a survivor, that's going to align a lot of things in your life. And the next step after that is just going to be your normal physiological needs. So it's going to be water, heat, shelter, and protection. So the thing that you got to watch out for, Linda, is when you get into this area, most people will go to stage one. Most people will go to Walmart and buy a first aid kit. They may set aside a couple of bottles of water, and that's great. And then when people start getting more serious about it, it goes to stage two, and then it kind of splinters off into a lot of different groups. It can splinter off into the prepper movement, and then that has a lot of political ramifications to it. Then it can splinter off into emergency preparedness in like an urban environment. I try to stick in that area. It can splinter off into bushcraft and, you know, going on a 200-mile hike for the month of April. You know, I know people who do that. So you can get carried away into any one of these particular areas, but the key at the beginning is to know that you want to survive.
Good point, because I think many people don't even think about that. They go out and get their water, they get their little medical supplies, and they think, I've got it covered. So what kind of disaster do you see most likely that could occur in an average person's life in America?
Well, the first thing you need to do in your hometown is you need to do what we would call a threat analysis. So if you live near railroad tracks and they're moving chlorine tanks coming through your neighborhood at 2 a.m. and one of those tanks rolls off and you have a chlorine gas cloud filtering over your neighborhood, that's a much bigger threat to you than the possibility of a tornado in another state, an adjacent state. So the first thing you want to do is do a threat analysis of your community. What factories, what industrial areas are there nearby? Are there natural things that can flood? Are there rivers, dams? So number one is to be aware of your surroundings. That would be the number one thing that people should start doing, you know, just in their daily routine.
Right. Good point. And today there was a 7.9 earthquake. There's been a series of large earthquakes around the world, but in Costa Rica. Now, for earthquakes in particular, what would you recommend?
Well, number one, get rid of the idea that someone's coming to save you. You know, the police, fire, EMS is going to be totally overwhelmed. Their doctrine, as pushed out by, you know, FEMA pushes out a lot of national policy and a lot of national doctrine, because FEMA is not really a response agency. They're really kind of should be thought of as like an insurance company. They pay the bill pretty much. So they'll throw in a lot of resources, but they're really just writing checks to people. So the response agencies that are you're going to be seeing initially is going to be your local sheriff, fire departments, and whatnot. They're going to be overwhelmed. In L.A. County, there's one fire truck for every 15,000 people. So descending on your local fire station expecting help is not the answer. So in an earthquake environment, let's say, like a 7.9, which would decimate Los Angeles for a number of different reasons, God forbid a 9.0. I like to prepare for 9.0. But essentially, aqueducts will be broken, so there goes your water. A lot of water is going to be used fighting fires. You're going to have a lot of chaos, people looking for direction, complete shutdown of the grid as far as food supply, nobody in, nobody out. So that's another thing you need to look for in your community is what are the access points? And Los Angeles, unfortunately, is pretty much a lockdown city to the north. To the east, there's some opportunities, but it's definitely not to the north. So that's the other thing you want to look at. In an earthquake situation, how long will it be before your city is completely run out of food, supplies, protection, electricity, all those things? So that's the number one thing I would say to start thinking about.
So in that case, if you were somebody living in an earthquake-prone area such as L.A., how much food and water would you recommend that they have at their home?
Well, the first thing is, let's say a 9.0 hits Los Angeles. Okay, a couple of things. You're going to have what we would call structural collapse. You're going to have buildings pancaking down. So, number one, stockpiling a lot of supplies in your apartment or your building is not a wise step. In fact, a lot of people, what they're doing now is they'll stockpile their supplies in like a big garbage tub. You like one of these 40-gallon plastic roll-away garbage tubs that they put leaves in and things like that. They'll put all their supplies there, and they'll keep it as close as possible to the garage so that if there is a structural collapse, they can get their garage door open and just reach around and pull out a tub of supplies and wheel it out to the front street. One of the things you have to remember in an earthquake with structural collapse is people are going to be afraid to go back into buildings. There's going to be a lot of buildings that are unsafe. There's going to be a lot of trapped people. Number one, don't go back into buildings. More people in the Mexican earthquake in 1985, almost as many rescuers died, amateur rescuers. I'm talking about well-meaning citizens, well-meaning people that just want to kind of assist and help out and be good Samaritans. Almost as many died trying to rescue people as the people actually killed in the structures. So you do not want to go back in a structure. So what ends up happening is you have a lot of people massing in the street. And so you'll get a lot of people leaving their apartment buildings and whatnot, massing in the street, standing around not knowing what to do. And then they'll start trying to organize ad hoc search parties to go rescue people. So one of the things you really got to have for your own personal protection is in your car, outside the building, you've got to have the three basics to protect yourself. You need a pair of good gloves. You need a pair of any kind of eye protection. You can go to Home Depot and just get, you know, a standard little pair of goggles and a dust mask, because the getting cut, getting something in your eye, breathing something. If you're breathing asbestos and you got a cut on your hand and you've got some specks in your eye, you're out of commission. So just that's very simple. That's $10 worth of items. But we call that personal protection. You want to be able to protect your eyes, protect your respiration system through a dust mask, and then also some gloves. Because all it's going to take is a really nasty gash and you're not going to be able to use your hand anymore. Right. God forbid. Again, you're out of action.
Right. I remember hearing about that in Katrina because it was so decimated that people couldn't even recognize their neighborhoods. And more people, as you said, got hurt just trying to look through things, stepping on nails, things falling, and just not wearing the right gear to be going through, you know, disaster areas.
You could start building out from there. And, you know, I'm always cringing. You know, I'll talk to people at the gas station, you know, and I'll just, you know, get into a conversation about what are they doing to get ready for an earthquake. Cause in LA, it's an easy conversation. Everybody should be talking about earthquakes. And that's the other thing about prepping and survival. If you want to make it a little bit more socially acceptable, you know, no one's going to fault you for stockpiling ammo in your basement and everything. Just don't tell the world about it. I mean, you could talk about survival. You could talk about preparation, disaster preparedness. That's how I do it, right? And so when you talk to folks and you say, hey, do you have an extra pair of sturdy shoes in your car? So especially women. Women have a lot of high heel fashion, right, and whatnot, and they're driving around their BMW. You got to have an extra pair of good walking shoes, two or three pairs of socks in your trunk, a good windbreaker, a good jacket. Now, I don't want to get into a lot of specifics. I got a YouTube channel. All you have to do is go to YouTube and type in Acton, A-C-T-O-N, Survival, and my channel will come up. It's Acton Survival. And what we try to do is give these kind of little tips, you know, 2 minutes here, 3 minutes there without bogging you down, cheap things that you can do to protect yourself.
Yeah, I've watched a lot of your videos. They're wonderful, actually. And one of the things I did learn that you're talking about now is that you have to split your preps up. Like you're saying, you might not be able to be in your home, or you might not be able to get to your garage, or you might not be able to get to your car. So you have to have supplies in different places just in case.
Yeah, and the more you can break it up, the better. And this is where you have to start. When you start getting into YouTube and you start getting it, you can look under prepping, you can look under survival and whatnot. One of the things that the newcomer has to avoid is watch out for the debates that'll begin over what's the best kind of knife, what's the best kind of flashlight, what's the best kind. You know, start small, you know, with some inexpensive items just to get the ball rolling, and as you want to up, you can start replacing things. So if you start off with a $4 or $5 flashlight, hey, that's better than nothing. Maybe 2 or 3 months later, you upgrade to a $10 flashlight with NICAD batteries or whatever it takes. But don't feel intimidated by people that say, you know what, only losers and idiots buy this particular EverReady or whatever flashlight. And don't get into that. Don't buy into it. It's like you have your specific needs for your family, and there's a couple of things that you can just keep getting into, the basic necessities, and it grows and grows and grows. Watch out for, you know, stockpiling a lot of food initially, because it's really that first 96 hours, that's first really 100 hours that you have to get through. And some food's okay, but water is going to be your key concern.
Right, yeah, so let's talk about water. I know myself, I bought a Berkey water filter actually right from our store here on InfoWars, because I thought if I was displaced from where I was, I would need some kind of the travel filter one to be able to filter pool water or swamp water or pond water. What would you recommend to people for their water needs?
Well, I mean, you know, InfoWars, the shop there is a great place to start, and those sponsors sponsor InfoWars, so I would definitely direct people there. You know, if you could start looking at, like, Africa, like in South Africa, places like that where they're in really remote areas, a lot of those people use those Berkey water filters there. They've been tried and true. Another great supporter of InfoWars is the Life Straw. The Life Straw basically is, it looks just like a little straw or a little flute, and you can take your 8 ounce canister and just stick the Life Straw on it, and it'll filter it through that. Worst case scenario, you can always take a cigarette filter and put it in a straw. You can use coffee filters, you know, for just cheap things to put in your go bag or your go kit. I recommend Mr. Coffee filters and funnels, and they're good. Well, what's that going to do? Well, I mean, when you start getting into really crummy water with lots of goo in it, it's going to be your first level of filtering, okay? But then after that, you can get plastic, very thin plastic water containers that you can lay in the cement and let the sun hit it for 2 or 3 hours, and the UV rays and the heat will purify the water and kill a lot of the creepy crawlies in it as well. So, again, there's a lot of things you can do. Water in the reserve of your toilet tank is a potable water. There's things like that. Water heaters, in a lot of houses, the water left in the water heater can be drained. So the thing is to start thinking about it, that because when you run out of water, it's not going to matter what kind of firearm you have, what kind of flashlight you have. Water is going to be your top priority, your top concern, and you're going to have to plan for about 1 gallon of water a day. Per person. So if you have a family of four, that's 4 gallons of water per day.
Wow, that is a big... Those Life Straws are amazing. I mean, you could carry those in your purse. That's just a wonderful thing. I didn't know about those. I'm going to have to get some of those. So, Dave, let's move on to some of the disasters that we could possibly face other than natural disasters. For instance, in the event of an economic collapse, what can we expect to see, and how can we best prepare for that?
Well, you know, you're talking basically, let's separate two different things. You're talking short-term disasters where help is on the way. So what we just talked about is, you know, hopefully in an earthquake or tornado or what have you, we're going to have a short-term disaster for ourselves, maybe 96 hours, and then relief organizations are going to start showing up, you know, and relief is going to start coming in. So if we can get through that first 100 hours, basic first aid, basic water, basic shelter, tarps, what have you. Now, what you're talking about is long-term disaster where we have, let's say, a gas crisis where gas goes to $10 a gallon or gas goes to $15 a gallon, and all of a sudden the semi-trucks stop running. Or there's an EMP, electromagnetic pulse, there's a solar flare, there's a man-made EMP. Bam, the solar flare hits these semi-trucks and the computers and the processors, and it shut them down. So once our transportation system stops, that's going to be a real problem for most people in the inner city. And as you know, as we push people into the city and corral them in, you know, it's going to be real hard to get out. It's going to be real hard to really get your resources. So I would say one of the things to always keep paying attention to is whenever you go out on a trip, if you're going to see some family members, always stop at the truck stops, because you can get a good gauge of what's going on in the economy by what you see with truckers and some of the things that they sell in truck stops. When you start seeing diesel go up at truck stops to, you know, $10 a gallon, we're going to be in a lot of trouble, because a lot of those wildcat truckers, they can barely make it on, let's say, $1,000 a week that they're making right now. And a lot of those guys have to pay for the diesel fuel out of their pocket. The minute diesel fuel gets up to, let's say, $10 a gallon, they're just going to stop because they can't make any money anymore. Then the flow of goods and services stops. Once that happens, then you're in a really, really bad situation. And that 100 hours is going to be nice to get through the 100 hours, but now you can have long-term problems.
Right. So under those kind of circumstances, we can expect possible civil unrest, martial law. How much food should you be prepared to, if you're going to stick it out in your house, you're going to ride out the civil unrest, the food shortages, the trucks not moving, how much food should you have?
Well, you know, one of the things I do is I experiment with food supplies and take a weekend and actually eat what you've got. You know, prepare MRE. And I'm not talking about meals refused by Ethiopians. That's an old army joke. But the meals ready to eat, the MREs, not the best in the world. But an MRE food pack, it may be only, 700 calories. So one of the things you're going to have to remember is, depending on how much work that you're expecting to do, you have to calculate your calorie load. So, you know, the average man is probably looking at least 1,500 calories a day just to survive. So let alone if you have to start walking 5 miles, 10 miles, 20 miles, you may need 3,000 calories. So you need to take a look at some of the survival supplies you have and look at your calorie intake, because you will not be able to continue to work or to burn calories and your survival activities if you don't have the right kind of food rationing. So I would say, number one, start with your calorie load. And number two would be careful about turning your house into a fortress. I mean, and there's different psychology for everybody. If you live in a gated community and you know your neighbors, you know, that's certainly a different lifestyle. However, if you're in a suburban neighborhood and people kind of know you're prepping and people kind of know you're stockpiling food, you're going to start getting people knocking on your door wanting food. So, you know, it's going to be a little tricky. I think you need two or three locations. I think it's nice to have your house with some food supplies, but you need some extra supplies in a car. Maybe even have a junk car, a beater that you've purchased that's you're storing somewhere else. Maybe even a storage shed outside of the city, you know, that you can pay $60 a month in storage fees and have some stuff there. But, you know, you've got to spread things out. Whatever works for you, but do not just put all your eggs in one basket. So that would be primarily the number one thing to start thinking about.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff. Very good. Now, I liked, you were talking about the psychological readiness that's also needed. And there's a lot of people out there that have children. And the effects on the children are going to be severe. How would you suggest that parents deal with children during some kind of crisis?
There's an old joke in this industry. There's rich people and poor people. The rich people are going to go to the hotel. The poor people are going to go to the shelters. So start thinking about, you may have to go to a shelter. You may have to go to a Red Cross shelter. You would be surprised. Children can be very resilient. Children can see a disaster as a game. Children can see a disaster. They're not as tuned into the fear aspect and normal disasters as adults are. So having some inexpensive toys in your go bag or your bug out bag, so, you know, plastic dinosaurs or coloring books. It's good to have those kinds of activities available so that you can get the kids over and get them coloring. The worst thing the kids want to see is the adults freaking out. When the adults get scared and the adults start freaking out, start yelling, screaming at each other, then the kids realize that their base of security is starting to erode, and then the kids start getting worried. But don't think that the kids initially are going to be in that much of a shock factor. Get them off doing something. Now, the grim realities of a major disaster is going to be the death toll. And that's something else that you want to think about, is as people start learning about their loved ones that have died, you're going to have groups and shelters, and you're going to have to be very careful and sensitive to get people away from the main group when you tell them that their loved one died. And there's this one police chaplain once said his technique is, I've got some really bad news for you. Brace yourself. Your husband's dead. Okay. So when you tell somebody something like that, you don't want them around the kids and the rest of the families and all that. You want to kind of segment them, because the last thing you want around the kids is you want hysterical people losing control. Now, the other thing you can do in a disaster, if you see a teenager and they're just kind of looking like, you know, they're okay, give people jobs to do. You know, tell the teenagers, hey, listen, you take care of the kids over here. Here's some coloring books or whatever. The sooner you can give people something to do and give them a, and give them something to engage them, that brings them back to a feeling of empowerment. That brings them back to feeling like, hey, you know, it's going to be okay. The worst thing you want is no plan, no idea what you're going to do, and people just standing around getting worried and panicked, and then you, everything's going to lose control, and you're going to have a real chaos on your hands.
Okay, and one of the things that you talked about that is along these lines and very difficult is that if there was a major disaster and mass casualties, there's going to be a lot of people hurt, dying, in need, and you said that you can't help them, that you're going to need to steel yourself. Can you talk a little bit about that? I watched a video on it, but maybe you can tell our audience.
Well, there is a national protocol for mass casualty incidents, and a mass casualty incident, or an MCI, is anything that overwhelms resources. So it could be a plane crash, could be a bus crash, whatever. So anything that's going to overwhelm local resources. So in an earthquake situation, already I can guarantee you that the hospitals are going to be evacuated. That's what's going on right now as we speak in Costa Rica. Hospitals are being evacuated. Why? Hospitals are a structure. The hospitals are, you know, now going through structural collapse and having their problems, so they start evacuating patients. So the typical tendency is like, hey, let's all rush over to the hospital. That's not going to work because the hospital is already being evacuated. It's going to take time, unfortunately, to set up field hospitals. And another grim reality is the field hospitals are going to be primarily designed to take care of the first responders. So the field hospitals are going to be designed for firefighter rehabilitation. They're going to be designed for police rehabilitation, for them to come off the street and take care of them first. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Get to know the people in your neighborhood that are nurses, that are EMTs, paramedics, flight nurses, you know, not necessarily trauma surgeons and what have you, but people that are used to the day in and day out. And the reason for that is this. If your neighborhood is decimated, you want to find your medical people, even if you have to call out, hey, medical people, everybody over here by the tree. You do not want the medical people getting engaged in high-risk behavior. You do not want them going into buildings, looking for people, organizing search parties. You want those people, their goal. You want to put them aside and put them in a reserve status, because as this community becomes organized, okay, you're going to need those medical people on standby to start taking care of people. And there's a triage system, and the triage system basically is a way that you can start giving help to the people who need it most. Where people have a real psychological block is in the MCI triage system, there's a color black, and black means dead, of course. And when you see someone and you try to revive them in 30 seconds, you know, you have to walk away from them if it's a large event. So you can't be like doing CPR and doing a lot of life-saving skills on one particular person when there's maybe 30 other people that need to be quickly seen. So one of the things you can ask when you get your medical people put aside is, hey, how many of you guys understand triage? And that's most people can remember that, because that goes all the way back to World War I, actually to the Napoleonic Wars. That's where it was started. And most of the EMS services today trace their history back to the Napoleonic Wars, because Napoleon's surgeon basically started this whole concept of triage. And triage is, who are the people we can help right now? Who are the people that can wait? And who are what we would call the walking wounded or the walking well? People that are just crying and screaming, but they really just have boo-boos. You know, they're hysterical or whatever. Not necessarily the ones that need the immediate treatment.
Okay, so let's talk a sensitive subject, guns. A lot of preppers have added buying guns to their prepping items and ammunition. But as we saw during Katrina, they went around and confiscated guns. So what is your opinion on being armed during a crisis, and do you see them confiscating guns if there is a large-scale disaster?
Well, yeah, that's the problem, is they're always going to want to have control of the situation, and what they're going to say, it's officer safety. They could say whatever they want. And if you notice in that Katrina, a lot of those films, a lot of the police that did that were out of state police. So, the relief organizations are sending in these out of state people. So the out of state people, they don't care. There's no political ramifications for them. Okay. So let's deal with it really quick.
So it's kind of like the UN coming into the United States, and it's like, they don't care. They're not Americans. Similar.
Well, yeah.
Kind of situation.
Yeah, when you mobilize a National Guard unit from the next state over, or you bring in cops from the next state over, or mutual aid, they don't know anybody. So, you know, but the idea here is a couple of things about guns. Be careful with guns, because guns can be used against you. And I'm just giving you some basic safety tactics. So never store your ammo and firearms together, because that's the worst thing you can do. If you keep loaded weapons in the house, you better be really, really good at knowing what you're all about, like a retired FBI agent or something like that. So rule number one would be, do not store the guns and ammo together, because if your house is looted, they're going to find your cash and they're going to say, great, we got loaded weapons now. Then you're going to come home and they're going to be sitting there in your living room with a weapon on you, right? So that's probably number one. Number two would be, the minute you use your weapon and fire it off, you're going to tell the whole world you have a gun. So keep that in mind. You may want to tell the whole world you have a firearm. That's fine. But a couple of things are going to happen. You've now given away your location or your position, unless you're like in the mountains and you're a rifleman and you've got yourself camouflage. Now, believe it or not, I was in Haiti before the earthquake, and gunfire was very routine. And in some of the areas, you'd hear bang, bang. And people were firing their guns off mainly as warnings. So mainly if the looters were coming near their house, they would fire off a shot in the air to let the looters know that there was someone in the house with a gun. But the neighborhood that I was in, it was a medical mission about 4 years prior to the Haiti earthquake. You would hear a firearm, a single shot go off about every half hour. Bam, bam, bam. It's pretty common. So that's one of the areas that I saw weapons being used, was just to kind of as a warning, like, and so the whole neighborhood was kind of like shooting these firearms off. But the other thing you got to watch out for is, the minute you kill somebody, if people are knocking on your house for food and you blow them away, if there's a big group outside that watched you do that, you're going to have to start deciding whether or not you want to kill another 30 people, because they're going to be a little upset with you. The other thing about firearms in a house is you can always be burned out. So you have to be careful with firearms, that they don't give you a false sense of security. Because if you start shooting people up, all you have to do is take a highway flare and some kerosene and sweep around the side of your house and set it on fire, and you're not going to be able to shoot the flames out. So firearms are tricky. And it's an individual choice, and it's very controversial. So I'm just giving you a few of the pros and cons there.
Right. And if you do decide to arm yourself, you should, of course, go practice if you're a novice, I would assume. Don't wait to try your gun out the first time you really might need it.
I recommend there's three levels of firearms. There's the long rifle, then there's the shotgun, and then there's the pistol. If you have a long rifle like a .223 or something like that, the idea behind that is to keep people 200, 300 yards away. You can pink off, little trucks and cars, and everyone knows, hey, this guy's a sniper. You could pin a lot of people down. So keeping people 200 yards away is a great idea. A shotgun, like a riot shotgun, like a Mossberg, that's great at keeping people about 50 yards away. But they're a little too close now. Okay, and by the time they're 25 to 20 yards away, now you can use your revolver or your semi-automatic. But that's the last resort. So I would recommend anyone considering a defense strategy is to consider the rifle first, then the shotgun, then the pistol. But by the time they're within pistol range, and you may have, two or three clips, let's say you have 30 rounds, I don't know how long that's going to last if it's a mob. So number one, I think, is maneuvering. Keep it in your mind about where you're going to maneuver, where you're going to conceal, where you're going to hide, where you're going to escape. So evading and escaping the problem is a lot better than confronting it head on in a frontal attack. So that's why several caches of food, if you've spread your food out on your property and, a gang finds one cache, there's no reason to start a big engagement with them, because they may not find the other five or six. So maneuvering and escape and evasion is just as important as having the firearm.
So
I think someone just escaped there.
This is actually a good question. What do you think about the Department of Homeland Security buying 1.4 billion hollow point bullets that were outlawed in the Geneva conference?
The Department of Homeland Security is a very interesting beast, and big government, I hate to be the one to say this, but I think it's pretty common. Most people would agree with this. Anytime you start consolidating a lot of agencies and consolidating power in one person at the top, there is an opportunity for abuses. You know, prior to the major consolidation of Homeland Security, you had different individual organizations, and they had their different individual things that they had to deal with. So you had the Secret Service doing their thing, you had the Coast Guard doing their thing. Now that they're all operating together, I think it's very dangerous. And the opportunities for abuse exist. So, I know that's probably a lot of training rounds, but that's a hell of a lot of training. So, you know, maybe I think it's appealing to just training officers where you can tell people, hey, we're going to go to the gun range. Let's go to the gun range. And you keep people in the excitement of blasting away. I think we got a train coming by the way. So,
but like the Social Security Department, why would they need bullets?
Well, I didn't know about Social Security buying, ammunition, but I can tell you that, most, peace officers.
74,000 rounds, I think it was.
Well, I'm not sure what how many, peace officers or federal agents the Social Security has.
Oh, 174. Yeah, 174. Sorry.
Yeah, so.
1,000 rounds.
I think in general, it's the gee whiz toys to get people to the range to be blasting up paper targets. But unfortunately, it's like a hammer. You carry a hammer around, all your problems look like nails. Having a lot of ammo stockpiled, ammo's only used for one thing. It's to kill people. It's simple as that. So that's just a great potential to kill people. And if the administration or the agencies run amok, and doesn't have a lot of heavy-duty civilian oversight, there's opportunities for abuses. So I think that's another threat as far as doing your community threat analysis. That's just another threat is a possible abusive agency that's armed to the teeth.
Wow. I really didn't expect that one to be on the list. I don't have enough water or food for that one, for sure. So are we, in your opinion, looking at a possible FEMA camp situation? Because of these being bought, could that be part of what's going on?
I think what you're always going to be looking for is if somebody is, some agency has that much control, the more autonomy and the more power and the more personal responsibility you take in your life to avoid situations like that, the better. Because the people are a mob. The people are a mass. And I think what the planning scenarios might be is if we have like a breakdown, which we have a very fragile transportation system, it wouldn't take much. So
and communication, which I know you're an expert and often talk about ham radios and how important it is for people to learn that. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because if the internet goes down and the wireless phones aren't working and all of a sudden we're in chaos.
Well, yeah, look at downtown LA. You get a basketball game. The LA Lakers, win a game and they're torching the downtown and burning cabs and all this kind of stuff. That's during normal times. So, you know, as people get riled up and as people get, pretty excited, especially after you miss three meals, right? Isn't that the old adage? Anarchy is only three meals away, right? So, you know, there's a psychological dependency on things like communications. There's a psychological dependency on the telephone and cellular phones and calling your loved ones and calling your family. That's another thing you should be aware of in your strategy to survive is your communication strategy, because you're going to want to let people know that you're okay, and other people are going to be looking for you wanting to know if you're okay. So that's the only thing about ham radio that it provides as you get into it. But you know what? Some of those frequencies and circuits, they'll start going down as well. They'll be good for a few days, but if we are really in bad straits with electrical power, very few of the ham relay stations use solar power, so they may be good on battery power for 3 or 4 days in some of the urban areas, but even they will start failing. So as the psychological things in life start failing, like texting, TV shows, talking to people on the phone, people are going to get more desperate and more desperate. And once they're in a desperate situation, they don't see a way out, then they become animalistic, and they're very, very, very dangerous at that point. So I think that is definitely something to remember and keep in the back of your mind for your emergency scenarios, is the loss of that emotional connection. That will really play a lot of havoc. And there's another great YouTube channel. I know I got, you know, my channel's called Acton the Actor. You can find it Acton Survival if you go to YouTube, Acton Survival. But Patriot Nurse, is another great YouTube channel. Patriot Nurse has one of a great video about the breakdown of society, and she focuses in on the psychotropic drugs after 3 or 4 days when people don't have their Valium and all these other kinds of drugs, what will happen to them. So as people that are dependent on alcohol, as people are dependent on drugs, as they lose those sources of coping mechanisms, then within 2 or 3 days, you can really have a big problem on your hands. But that mob is now the threat. That mob is like a hurricane. That mob is like a chlorine gas tank that fell off your railroad car. That mob is just another threat that you have to deal with a strategy. And the best way to deal with it is to get away from it. Not shoot it out with them. Just try to escape and evade and be out of their way, because that's going to be a big problem.
Well, what if the government is, as you say, the crisis that we have to deal with all these bullets being ordered? How do we deal with that?
Well,
how do you run from the government if they're going to install martial law? They're going to herd everybody off to superdomes for their own good, take away their guns. What would you recommend?
Well, unfortunately, I think we can all agree that the government doesn't have a very good track record in this area. And I think Katrina is, you know, a prime example of a horrible track record. So number one is for you and your family and your friends is to, number one, make the decision that we're not relying on the government. We're distrustful of the government. And why do I say be distrustful of the government in an emergency? They have a different agenda. No matter who it is, no matter what good intentions they have, their agenda is their agenda. It's not there to help you. The government is not there to help you in an emergency. In fact, there were a lot of pilots during Katrina complaining about all the gas that was being wasted on picking people up off the roofs of these houses, you know, these helicopter pilots. So they were up there to get the flying hours. They weren't there to rescue people off roofs of houses. They were there to get a lot of flying time. So that's a different agenda. So I think, number one, it's certainly with everyone's right to start telling their family and their community, the government can't do anything for this. So the more you can draw away from reliance on the government, the more you can break that dependency relationship,
right,
just to be able to stay away from them. No one can really fault you for that. No one can really come after you and say, hey, you know, you're a real crackpot for thinking that way, and say, really? Because I don't want to be in the Superdome and watching people die left and right like caged animals. So that's number one.
So avoid any big Superdome-like areas for sure.
Well, that's the problem, because what happens in a mass situation with a large population of people is the government's going to have to do something, right? And so whatever they do is not going to be good. It's going to be something that's going to be done just for that time period to quell the situation. So if it's to herd people over here or get people over there, whatever. Because remember, you're not having resources showing up for a good 96 hours, maybe a week in some desperate cases. So, you know, relying on organized government to assist in that situation is foolhardy. Personally, that's what I think. Because the fire stations are just going to lock down. Fire trucks aren't going to be running around putting fires out. They're going to want to put all their apparatus in reserve. Same thing with the hospitals. Same thing with the ambulances. So what initially will happen, my take is, you're going to see a lot of people that are really scared. And if the government's not there, they don't see the police officers, they don't see the fire trucks, they don't see the ambulance services, they're going to freak out even more. And that would be my warning of a danger, is if you're in an earthquake situation, whatever, when they're not hearing the sirens, you know, that will bother people even more, knowing that help's not on the way. That is what bothers people, is when they realize that they're on their own, help is not on the way.
That's a really good point, because I think a lot of people think of the government as a parent, and if something happens, oh, it's okay, it's the American government, they'll come save me, as we saw in Katrina, that didn't happen. Dave, thank you so much. This has been really illuminating. You have so many wonderful vids on your YouTube channel. I don't want to get into the specifics of prepping, because you have hundreds of videos, so people can go and find whatever they want to know about. In closing, is there anything you want to leave us with that people should know to be prepared?
Well, I think, I've learned a lot. You know, I'm new to this, and I would say that YouTube is a great place. The Alex Jones InfoWars channel, as far as having all the products that you can get you started, like the water filters and the Life Straw and things like that, great place to start. My channel is Just search in YouTube, Acton, A-C-T-O-N, and Survival, two words, Acton Survival. You'll eventually get to my channel, David Acton. And then there's other great channels there. Patriot Nurse is another one. I'll plug her because she hits everything from a medical perspective. Just don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid of it. Get started. Do something today, and you'll feel a lot better. And Linda, by the way, I thank you very much for inviting me. And it's my honor to be your first interview on InfoWars, so thank you.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's my honor to be part of the team, and thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us and helping everyone.
Okay.
Have a great night. Well, thanks to Dave for giving us that wonderful information. And as he said, you can find all of these survival products right here at InfoWars.com store. We have all these great products like the Pocket Socket, the Survive and Thrive Organic Food Supply, the Pro Pure Big Water Filtration System, which is awesome. We also have Alex Jones' 4-day on-the-go food pack, which is great, and Alex Jones' 5-day emergency grab-and-go, and also Alex Jones' 16-day Patriot Food Supply. We have tons of things available here, everything you could possibly need. Folks, if you want to be prepared, you can find everything you need for your family right here at InfoWars.com. It helps support our team, and we certainly want to make sure that your family's safe and you're not counting on the government, because we certainly aren't. Don't forget to become a member of Prison Planet TV, and you can support all of us here at InfoWars to bring you the news that keeps you free. Thanks for tuning in to the nightly news at InfoWars.com. I'm Linda West, and have a wonderful night.